Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Wednesday, brought to you by Metro Rooter. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. Jaguars Today just kicking off here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Tony, I'd be quite content to retire that open if they'd stack up a few more. I wish there were enough of those celebratory highlight mixes that we had, that we
yeah.
could push that one aside and say, what are you doing using one from 2014 when we have all these out here to choose from in front of us? Can we get one of those this week? That's the question. You know, in fact, the question we're asking today in regards to this this matchup, where's the advantage for the Jags and what's the biggest disadvantage? In other words, you know, where do the Jags have the edge over Miami? Where do the Dolphins have the biggest edge over Jacksonville?
Yeah, and Jaguars fans, it's pretty predictable. They're still feeling a little salty and snarky.
I get it. Some of them are trying to give realistic, like, hey, I think, you know, the run defense can do a good job on Lamar Miller in this game. Okay, I could buy that, right? I mean, look, Miami's offense didn't light the scoreboard up against the Washington Redskins. They put up 10 points offensively. They got a punt return touchdown. You know, that's what everyone expects to be a mediocre Washington club, which you can get in trouble with
sure.
those expectations.
You
right?
can, and the response to that would be, as the pessimist, it would be, well, the defense only gave up 13 to Carolina this week, and that was good enough to beat them by 11.
This is true.
Yeah.
Right.
Because so if they only give up 10, then we'll only get beat by a touchdown.
Oh, you're not going to be that guy with me today. You are going to come up with an advantage for the Jacksonville Jaguars in the next 2 hours, or you're not going home, young man. That's just the way it's going to be. But today, that's what we want to try to figure out. What can the Jags do? Let's put, look, 0-1, you can't do anything about it, right? It's on the record. We've looked back at that one. We've dissected it enough. And today is a day to begin looking forward and seeing right where they can they end up. Look, Tony, if I told a lot of people, all right, they're going to beat the Carolina Panthers, they're going to lose to the Miami Dolphins. If you had done it in reverse, a lot of people would have bought that, right, and said, okay, you know, the Panthers kind of a mediocre team, Miami maybe more of a team on the rise. They're not on the rise to the level of the 72 Dolphins here, okay? They're a solid team, and I think they are a playoff contender, but they're not a world beater. They're not any kind of Super Bowl favorite or anything like that. Ryan Tannehill is a good young quarterback. He's not flawless, certainly. They have some playmakers. But again, Washington, where Kirk Cousins at quarterback hung around in that football game all afternoon long against Miami in the opening week. So go out there. As Dan Hicken's been saying, there's no rule saying you can't go out and beat a team that you're the underdog to. And the Jags, quite frankly, we'll be underdogs practically every game the rest of the way, including when they make that trip to Tampa. It was interesting. I read an article on ESPN. You know, Vegas kind of does a power ranking. That's how they set the lines. They do a power ranking, and they assign a number to a team. The Jags' number is 15. The Dolphins' number is 23.5. So typically that'd be an 8.5-point favorite. But actually, most people think you get 3 points for home field. Typical team gets 2.5 in the league. So that's where you come up with the discrepancy. But look, we've got to get past the point here with this football team where you're shocked if they hang around with a good team. And I just think everybody kind of got gut punched in week one because they expected so much out of the offense, and it didn't really answer the bell in the second half at all. And particularly after the pick six, it really just went downhill from there and couldn't mount much in a one-possession football game. Let's put that behind us and get it done. Are there areas that the Jags can actually have an advantage over the Miami Dolphins in week two?
This isn't specifically an area where they can just have an advantage, but I think when you're talking about, you know, the things that went wrong on Sunday against Carolina and you're trying to figure out what is and isn't correctable, right, going forward. Look, I said it when we came in on Monday. The most disappointing part of that game to me was watching a bunch of second-year guys that you're expecting to grow up that didn't look like they had. Like, that's the single most disappointing thing about that game is watching Hearns, Robinson, and Green drop passes when they had opportunities to make big plays. That's correctable, right? Your play caller calling plays that gets a guy open 30 yards downfield, your quarterback making the right read, putting the ball in the right place.
You executed up
right
to that point.
And a guy just dropping the ball, that's fixable over the course of 1 week. And who knows how much if they make two of those four plays changes the outcome and the complexion of that game, where if you are a fan of, you know, this team going up tempo and trying to force the pace a little bit, even the Philadelphias, those teams of the world, they don't push pace until they get a first down.
Right.
Like, that's just the way it works. You get a first down, and then you're like, now we have them on their heels, let's go. And Jacksonville, if they were trying to do any of that, couldn't. Because even when they made the right play call, even when they got the guy open, they dropped the ball. And that's easy to fix over the course of a week. Make the easy plays, and who knows what happens.
In theory, it's easy, right? But I mean,
unless you have guys who just can't catch.
Well, I mean, Allen Hurns has had an issue with drops since he got here,
which is a real possibility that they just have guys who are going to drop the ball.
Right. And look, there are great receivers in the league that had issues with drops. Terrell Owens, Hall of Fame receiver, go look at the numbers. The guy dropped some of the easiest passes you'll ever see, and some of that is a desire to turn upfield and make a play quickly. I don't know what the root of it is with the Jags. I think maybe once one happens, they start thinking about it because it has been an issue for them. It was an issue in the preseason.
Right.
It's carried over into the regular season. So I don't know what the psychology behind it, if there is one, or if it's just simple physical errors that they're making at inopportune times, but you're right, that needs to get corrected. That just isn't yet, from what we've seen, that margin for error that you can give away plays. Now, you're going to have some bad plays in the National Football League, too, and that's the thing. You cannot let it crush you. You throw a pick six against the Carolina Panthers, and the game felt like it was over at that point in time, and Blake Bortles felt like he didn't play as well from that point on. Whether that's in his head, constantly thinking, I can't make another mistake like this, whatever it is. Look, you're going up against a team that victimized you a couple of times last year in this department. You can't be thinking like that. They've got to take more chances. He's got to be more assertive. Whatever he does, he's just got to do it with total confidence back there. That doesn't mean throw into double coverage when the guy has no prayer of catching it with confidence.
Right.
Make the right read, but don't be afraid to stick it in there if it's tight coverage.
And by the way, look, this is a Jaguars team, and we've been on them all week, and deservedly so, right, with the performance of that offense in the second half. But the first half wasn't bad, right? Like, the first half wasn't bad offensively. Even with the Hurns fumble down there inside the 10-yard line, which can't happen going forward for this football team, even without that, that's a half where they should have come away with 13 points. How often were they able to come up with a 13-point half in 2014?
Not too often.
Right. It was better than it was last year, even in a half where you felt like it wasn't what you saw completely in the preseason, but it was improved based on what you had seen the year before. Second half, they sucked. There's no way to get around that. Second half, they were terrible on the offensive side of the ball. But there were glimpses of them being better. It was just the pick six and everything that happened offensively in that second half makes it really hard to try to pull any positives out of that football game. But I think they're there. And the opportunities to make big plays were there. So there's... you feel like there could be opportunities again this week. They have to be able to take advantage of it against Miami.
All right, coming up today, John Osier will join us for a little Oh No segment coming up in about an hour from now. Also, we'll get your weekly injury report with Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute as we're here in the JOI studios. And we'll talk advantages and disadvantages, the matchups versus the Miami Dolphins throughout the course of the day. If you want to get in, if you've got a question, comment, concern, or revelation, however you want to characterize what you've got to say about the Jacksonville Jaguars, you're always welcome to join the show at 641-1010 on the phone and lines. Also, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at that same number, 641-1010. Again, the question of the day is this, and it's brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. What is the biggest advantage and the biggest disadvantage that the Jags have in their matchup with Miami this week? You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Phone lines open to you. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. Glad you're along with us, Jaguars, today. You know what? We're going to flush week one thanks to Metro Rooter, right? We'll just move right on to week two, Tony. We've got the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line open. I like to call it the Highway of Positivity, also the River of Goodwill. You have any other names you'd like to
what, the text
give
line?
The text line? Yes. What do you think? The pipeline of cheer.
Only selective text. That's what I think.
Well, let me get a couple in, and we'll go right to the phones at 641-1010 this morning. Oh, my. You know, we're really not going back, but this one is notable. The Jags' drops were frustrating, but none of them, as we were talking about receivers needing to hang on to the football, none of them were as bad as Ted Ginn Jr.'s memorable drop on that blown coverage. I agree.
Sure.
I agree, because that's a walk-in touchdown. Yeah. I agree with that. So, and that's what we said. You're going to make mistakes. The other team made mistakes, too. Missed field goals. They missed field goals.
No, they did. But
drop passes.
Like, the way I look at it, Ted Ginn gets that touchdown. If Rashad Greene holds onto the ball inside the five-yard line, that turns what was a field goal drive into potentially a touchdown drive, too. Right.
Like,
sure. Like, it's on both sides. I get there was no bigger drop in the game than Ted Ginn's.
No, and I'm not saying, yeah, I'm not saying that it was far outweighed on one side or the other. I'm just saying,
no.
You know, there's a tendency to look at the plays that go poorly for you,
sure,
and say if we had corrected those, everything would have been fine. Well, if everything else had gone the same, sure, that's the case.
Yeah, and I think the Jaguars missed more of those plays than Carolina did on Sunday. Because Ted Ginn's is
possibly
the only one I can remember where it was like that. I do think the third down that has been talked about for a couple days now with the timeout being taken, Cam Newton missed a wide-open Greg Olsen. And I mean wide-open Greg Olsen, 3 yards past the sticks. There was nobody within 10 yards of him, and he was just standing there waiting on the ball. And Cam Newton checked it down to Jonathan Stewart, and it didn't matter in the end. They came back and converted it the next play anyway. But it could have been a huge play for Carolina if Cam had been looking at the only reliable target he had in the passing game that day.
Duval Doom made me laugh this morning already. Thank you, Doom. He said, the Dolphins already think the Jags suck, so the advantage would be if we can just not suck. Hashtag trap game. Hashtag Jaguars today. Whatever you want to call it, I don't care. Let's get it done this weekend, right?
That'd be nice.
No excuses. I mean, it shouldn't shock the world. This is the NFL. We have to stop being shocked if the Jags win a football game. But the reason we are is because they've done it so infrequently over the last 3 years. And I know Gus Bradley's only been here for two of those years, but they've done it infrequently in that stretch as well. Let's get some calls going. 641-1010, if you'd like to weigh in, you know all the ways to do it. James is going to start us off this morning on Jaguars Today. Hi, James. How are you?
Hey, guys. Love the show. I call in a lot. I have a comment, and I've been saying it for going on 3 years now. I don't think Bradley's a very cerebral guy. When I heard him say, he was asked, why didn't you go to the tight end more? Well, we looked to do that four or five times, but they took that away from us. And we continue to come out in the second half and lay an egg. There's no adjustment. And I don't know why that's not talked about more. That tells every other coach in the league we can shut them down, and they don't have an answer for it. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, the consistencies with great franchises starts in the front office. We have a head coach that knows very little about winning in the NFL from his position. We have a GM that knows very little about picking the right players. And until we correct that, listen, you've seen it. Jeff Fisher, they beat Seattle last week. I mean, 4 years in, they won 6 games last year, 7-7. I mean, this is awful, guys, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right, I will say this, though, about taking away the tight end. Did the Panthers not do a good job at halftime adjusting to the fact that the Jags were blanketing Greg Olsen? I mean, you could take something away in the National Football League if you really want to. The question is, what's left is that are you able to exploit what's left and still do enough to win the football game? For instance, the Jags take away Olsen. They really can't take advantage with their outside receivers, Tony, but all they did was just kind of piece together enough little plays on third down, a few Cam Newton scrambles, a few Jonathan Stewart runs. It was nothing spectacular that the Carolina Panthers were doing.
No.
But their prime guy got taken away by the Jags. Does that mean that Ron Rivera can't coach in the National Football League? Well, he won the game. Sometimes something's going to get taken away, and I'm quite sure Carolina probably came in looking at the film of the preseason. Wow, they're throwing to the tight end a bunch. Maybe we need to guard these guys, and let's see if these young receivers on the outside can beat us. Those young receivers then need to step up and beat them.
Look, here's coming out in the second half, right? The Panthers got the ball first. The Jaguars forced the punt. It's 10-9. They forced the punt. T.J. Yeldon for 6 yards on their first play in the second half. They lose a yard on second down with T.J. Yeldon. Blake Bortles hits Allen Hurns for a first down for 11 yards. Then you have the holding penalty, then the pick six, right? And that was kind of the turning point in the game. Their next drive, right, starting at their own 20, right after that, Denard Robinson up the middle for 5 yards. Denard Robinson catches a pass for 15 yards. Denard Robinson for two. Denard Robinson for two. And then the big play on the left side to Allen Hurns where he dropped the ball. Right? And that's a play where you make that play, you're at the Carolina 30.
And you go and you've gone bing, bing, bing right down
momentum.
The field.
It wasn't that they didn't make adjustments. Guys didn't make plays. When there were opportunities to make plays, they didn't make plays. This one to me is not on the coaching staff. It's not on the play calling. This is on the guys that are out there that have opportunities to make easy looking plays in the NFL. They're not making them. And in the end, that comes down on Dave Caldwell and the personnel that they've decided to bring here. If these guys aren't good enough, then it's going to show up this year and everybody's going to be in trouble. But that on Sunday, I don't think that's on Gus not making adjustments on at halftime. That's on the guys when they have an opportunity to make a play, not making it at any point in that game.
And to me, that's not on Jerry Sullivan either.
No.
I mean, it's Jerry Sullivan, you can teach a guy the proper techniques. He has to go out there and execute those techniques. But in the end, catch a football, okay?
That's not that hard.
It's one thing we can all do. We can all catch a football. Now, we can't catch it in those circumstances, in those conditions, but we're not Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns and outstanding athletes and you know, NFL caliber athletes that have been playing that position our entire lives. You got to do better at that spot. This is Gus, by the way, talking about the usage or lack thereof from the tight ends.
I know that we had some plays, five or six, really designed to go to Mercedes and to utilize our tight ends. The read took them away from it. So it wasn't that they weren't called. It just the read took them away from that particular play.
And you can argue, I mean, I think James' point was, hey, you got to figure out a way to get them the ball. Well, I mean, again, certain guys get taken away. Tony, look at how many number one wide receivers, right, in the National Football League. Legit number one wide receivers didn't have big games in week one. Odell Beckham Jr., right? Didn't do much against the Dallas Cowboys. They game plan to take him away. They hit him every opportunity, and they lit him up pretty good early in that football game.
Double and triple teams.
And
I mean, it was,
you know, so what do you do if you're Eli Manning? Well, you look for other guys to, maybe it's the running game. Maybe it's, you know, Reuben Randall or Preston Parker in that particular game. You've got to find other guys. Calvin Johnson. And really, Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate did nothing in the passing game for the Detroit Lions. They didn't win the game, but they scored a bunch of points in that football game, some of it on defense. But my point being, you're going to have days when the opponent takes away something out of your game plan.
Sure.
Or you can take a single receiver away. You can take potentially a running back away if you're able to commit that much effort to that one proposition. And that typically leaves other guys in one-on-one situations. That's where you got to beat the man across from you.
And it's, look, I get fans' frustration, and they want to put the blame on somebody, and the easiest place to put that blame is going to be on the head coach. And I don't know that Gus Bradley has done a great job here. I mean, they've won 7 games in 2 years. It hasn't been a great product on the field from this team. I just look at that game on Sunday, and I don't blame Gus, and I don't blame Greg Olsen. I blame the guys that have opportunities to make plays that don't. And it's plays that I've seen them make, right? It's plays that I've seen them make in this league before that they didn't make on Sunday. It's a guy missing a block on the offensive line that I'm not used to seeing Brandon Linder miss a block, right? I think he's better than that. And the idea that he doesn't make the block well enough on a run play so it results in a loss of one instead of a gain of seven, I put that on Linder, not on the coach. That's on Linder for not executing that play when he has an opportunity to create one for this team.
All right, look at this. This is up and down right here. All right, here's one says the Jags' biggest disadvantage is the entire roster. They're terrible. That's on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, right? Right, we go to the next one. The way I see it, the Jags are tied for second in the AFC. Right now, go Jags. Then we've got this lengthy one. You have to blame everyone from Khan to Bradley. The regime acted like a kid procrastinating all year long, only to start on a science project the night before. All of a sudden, they expect to win. Had they established a culture of winning from the jump, this team would be a lot farther ahead, both in victories and in its development.
How do you do that?
I don't know what that. I mean,
with the roster they inherited, how do you establish a culture of winning?
I don't know what he means by they waited till the last second to. You know, I don't know if he's saying they finally spent some money in free agency
right. This
year. I'm not sure, but
should have gone and got Peyton Manning because he was coming to Jacksonville. Like, you do realize guys have to want to be where you are, Like, it's not just, oh, we got all this money to spend so we can go get everybody in the world. They got to want to be here. It's a two-way street. It's a two-way marriage. They talked to James Jones. They talked to Greg Jennings. They had talked to Randall Cobb, right?
Like they went after Devin McCourty.
Right.
They went after a bunch of guys.
They talked to these guys. Those guys chose not to be here. Now, they may have chosen not to be in Jacksonville because of whatever product they perceive this to be here, and that's this team's fault too, right? It all works together, but you can't just say establish a winning culture. What does that mean?
Well, certainly once you've established it, though, you know, it's understandable why a guy like Devin McCourty would want to stay with a Super Bowl championship roster.
Right, they did.
Right, why Randall Cobb would want to stay, continue to catch passes from Aaron Rodgers with a team that is
makes
a perennial
sense.
Contender. You know, it's tough to pull those guys away, and to do it, you have to grossly overpay sometimes. A lot of people felt like they overpaid for Julius Thomas. We'll find out. We'll see. I have a feeling Julius will be very good. We just like to see him out there. And look, that's not his fault. That's a fluke play. He gets upended. He breaks a bone. And
right.
What are you going to do?
I said it at the time. I was like, if you were going to call one play just to get him a touch in that game, that's the play I would call.
Right. Quick. Just get in his hands. Let him get his feet underneath him and, get the blood flowing a little bit. And it just happened to go down the way it did. Let's get Darren in quickly before we break. Hi, Darren. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Enjoy the show. Great insight. I'm a guy half glass full. I just drove across the Dames Point. I have no desire to jump off the Dames Point, okay?
Good.
The bottom line is that this is a young team. I thought the team looked tight across the board from the kicker to the quarterback. I felt like only the veterans, which I'm, Puzz, was the only one flying around out there. I thought the team just looked tight. I don't think they were, loose like they were in the preseason. I had butterflies in my stomach, and I wasn't even on the field. And so I know you got to get past that. You got a young team. But, guys, let's face it. We were getting the hell beat out of us the last 2 years. I felt like we had a shot to win the game up until about the last 5 or 6 minutes. So, anyway, I'll hang up to listen, guys. Enjoy the show.
All right, thanks, man. We got to get beyond that point, though. Just, hey, we're hanging around. We hung around in that football game.
Yeah, that's done.
Win games.
Yeah.
Win games now. I mean, yes, is it technically, you make the argument that – they're more competitive for longer in this opener, right? It was a one-score game for longer than last year. That's not the standard.
Right. Look, we can come in here and tell you 2 years ago they lose that game by 30. What's that do for you?
But I appreciate Darren, saying, hey, look, I'm not throwing the towel in on the season.
Right.
I'm hanging in there.
But, my comments about the coaching staff and not wanting to blame them for that loss on Sunday, I'm not trying to be an apologist for Gus Bradley either. Like, if the product continues to look like this, we all know where it's going to fall. Like, there's no mystery about where the blame is going to fall if the product continues to look like this in 2015, and it's going to be Bradley and it's going to be Caldwell, and it should be in the end if it continues to look like this. For 1 week, I'm saying players have to make plays. Now, it's the players they've selected, but the players have to make plays because they were put in position to, and they just didn't do it this week. Can they do it against Miami? It's become, we talked about, these first two games are so critical for this team with back-to-back home games before you go to New England and Indianapolis. Well, you start 0-1, and you laid an egg in that first one. Miami's coming to town. Find a way, boys.
All right, if you're on the line, stay right there. 641-1010. Get a step aside. Take a quick timeout. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, a Metro Rooter Wednesday. What is the biggest advantage and disadvantage for the Jags in their matchup with Miami this week? That's your question of the day. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today for all size plumbing jobs. Metro Rooter, the call to make at 695-1911. I trust them in my own house. Whether it's your house, your place of business, even industrial plumbing, septic systems, you name it. Same day service, weekends included. The right people with the right equipment. That's why Metro Rooter's been doing it so well and serving Jacksonville since 1978. Folks keep going back. When they have issues, Metro Rooter, the call you need to make. Visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Quickly, some texts on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, and we've got calls to get to as well, Tony. This one, it says, I completely agree. With Fat Tony, everyone wants to blame the coach. The players have to make plays. Moving on, we've got, let's see here. If Marks is practicing this week, could he possibly play next week? I don't know exactly what the timetable is, but it's good that he's getting out there in any fashion right now.
You would expect if he's able to practice this week, maybe not against Miami, but
possibly against New England.
Possibly.
On a limited basis.
Yeah, some kind of rotational basis for Cinderic.
That would be the hope, and let's hope there's
probably
no setbacks.
Pass rush. Yeah, he'd probably be part of that, like the NASCAR package or whatever they're calling it this year.
This one also in from the 404 area code. Looks like the best wide receiver we have that's got hands is not even playing, and that's Justin Blackmon. Let's see. This one in from also the 404. It might be the same one. It is. We are currently the laughing stock of the NFL. When will it stop? Enough is enough already. No more dad blamed excuses. All right. Then,
all right.
That's how I read, you know, asterisk, pound sign, exclamation point, dad bland.
It's some kind of not so pretty word.
That's correct. Let's see. This one in, where are we going to go? From the 904, the receivers and tight ends who can catch a ball should be starting, period. Let's see. This another one from the 904. You guys can't read one text versus another. Your points are understood. All I'm doing is highlighting how some people are positive, some people are negative.
Sure.
That's just kind of alternating. But it goes on to say, but there was money to spend in the past, not just 2015. Mercedes should be off the roster regardless of his talent level because of his drops. A winning culture establishes that day one. Belichick, Coughlin, Tomlin would not have it. TC cut good players in year one and two. Kelly is doing it now in Philadelphia. Let's remember Belichick sucked until Tom Brady appeared in the lineup due to an injury to Drew Bledsoe. Shall we at least remember that?
Look, I think there's something to, you know, I heard callers on Sunday, and I know Loggeman mentioned it yesterday too, the whole Brian Walters thing. He's not dropping the ball. Should he be getting more opportunities? Well, if guys are going to continue to show that they're not going to make plays when they have an opportunity,
he'll get his opportunity.
Right, and Walters shows that every time he's given one, he makes a play, then yeah. His opportunities in this offense should expand. And if Mercedes Lewis is going to be inconsistent, by the way, you don't know what Mercedes Lewis is in 2015.
They haven't thrown him the ball.
Right.
You
he
looked
don't
great in the preseason.
No.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's just, he looked good in the preseason. I like the role that he's in with this offense now. He's been a dartboard for fans for the last couple of years. And honestly, as a guy as physically talented as he is, that doesn't make the plays that he's had the opportunities to make, he deserves to be a dartboard for the fans.
Here's the question. Do you have a better guy to replace him with? What are you going to do? Is Nick Jacobs better than Mercedes Lewis right now? Is he more physical than Mercedes? Look, because we all focus on simply the catching of the ball. And no
sure.
question he's had drops. But Mercedes is valuable as a blocker.
Yeah, I've said it since they brought in Julius Thomas. Mercedes is in the role he should be in
perfect.
In the NFL.
Exactly. Should be an occasional target in the passing game, but he should be a guy who uses great physical violence on defensive
yeah.
players in the run game, and I mean that in a good way. Let's go to the phone, 641-1010. Pat, you're next up this morning on Jaguars
hey.
Today. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I love the show. I listen to the station all day long. I was listening yesterday to Loggeman, and so he has great insight. The one word that kept coming, that he never used, but he kept talking about it, was excuses. He just had nothing but excuses. He was okay with the 2-3 and out. The team was tight. Well, guess what? The Carolina Panthers weren't tight. They weren't marched right down the first time in sport. You know, and he said, oh, they didn't execute on that out route down there when it was first and goal. It was a horrible call. We shut down Greg Olsen, but guess what? They tried to go to him because he's their big dog right off the bat when they were in scoring range. It was called back, but that's where they went. We didn't even try to get to our big dog. It was nothing but excuse after excuse and saying, oh, we had some misfortune. You know, get aggressive. The defense I thought was wonderful. They attacked all day long, but the offense had no attack. They were playing like they just didn't want to lose it. And it was, oh my lion eyes. We have looked at this and been watching this for 4 or 5 years, and there's nothing changed. This is going to be a big week here in Jacksonville that we hope we see something change. That's all I got. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Pat. The one thing I will argue with is that the big dog is not Mercedes Lewis. The big dog, as currently constituted with Julius Thomas out, is Allen Robinson. And they did try to go to Allen Robinson.
Yeah,
right?
He didn't get into his route. Like, he ran into Rashad Green, I think it was, on that site, and couldn't even get into his route on that third down.
But even just in general.
Right.
Look,
I'll say this. I haven't been critical of Greg Olsen because I actually think he did an okay job on Sunday.
And he was talking about the Panthers, Greg Olsen, obviously.
Yeah, but talking about our Greg Olsen here, I didn't like the goal-to-go stuff. Like, I didn't like on first down that you're trying the fade to Rashad Green. Like, I don't like that call. On second down, I don't mind running the ball. But if you're going to run the ball, why not do it on first down? Like, if that's part of that series, then why not run Yeldon on first down, see if he can get it down to the 3-yard line, and now Carolina has to guess as to what you're going to do on second down, as opposed to, you know, you get to third down, they know what's happening from the 3.5. You're going to throw the ball from that kind of position, and look, Blake made the choice. He had Mercedes Lewis one-on-one with the linebacker on at the top of that play, and chose instead to go to Allen Robinson at the bottom, who didn't get into his route. And in the end, it was probably a bad decision by Blake on that, and I don't like that nothing they did was towards the middle of the field in the passing game, down there in goal line. I think they should try to at least run something in there to keep some guys honest, but everything they did was to the outside.
Let's get Desmond up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Desmond.
Good morning. Desmond. How are y'all, man?
Desmond, what are you doing there, man? You getting pulled over or what?
No, I'm downtown. Rick, it's ambulance. I have a couple of questions I want to ask y'all. My question is, I know Gus said over the summer, everybody wanted to be competitive, but when I look and I see everybody else have a joint practices, how come we don't have joint practices? And we have four good teams we play against in our preseason that we could have got better with. Okay, my other question is, I thought it was a pass interference when Blake Bortles threw the football to Allen Robinson and the Carolina Panthers. His back was towards the ball. Ain't that a pass interference? And my other question is, I believe in the fourth quarter, the last 8 minutes, I feel like defense, I don't want to say defense gave up, but they were so tired because the offense kept going three and out, or they'll get a first down and go 3-and-out. Don't give us defense enough time to rest. You know, and now I think it all paired.
All right, thanks. Defenses, when you're out there, you know, especially early in the season when you haven't been playing 60 minutes, can get worn down when you're on the field for 34, 35 minutes. As far as the joint practice thing goes, some coaches swear by it. Others think it's detrimental that you focus too much on the getting hyped up against another team, things like that. And some coaches like it, other coaches don't. You know, what the New Orleans Saints have used it, Tony. They won a Super Bowl. They won a Super Bowl last year, you know?
No.
So when they stink, is it because of the joint practice or do they not have it? You know what I mean? I mean, look, I think you can look at it and say there are some good teams that use joint practices. There are some bad teams that use joint practices.
Sure. And the pass interference, I think, was on that first and goal after the Hearns catch.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was pass interference, but in the end, it had no effect.
All right, we got to take a timeout. We're coming back. This State in Football and the Honda Drive around the NFL. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, This State in Football History.
All right, This State in Football History time, and it's brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date, September 16th, go back to 1950, the Cleveland Rams, formerly the All-American Football Conference, they played their first NFL game, and Tony, they didn't waste any time. They beat Philadelphia 35-10. They didn't have any building process, Tony. There was no four-year plan for the Cleveland Rams. 1973, we actually referenced this one. I believe it was earlier this week. Buffalo's O.J. Simpson ran for a then-NFL record 250 yards in Buffalo's 31-13 victory at New England.
Yeah, we were talking about Jamal Lewis.
Jamal Lewis had the 295-yard game recently, or the anniversary of his 295-yard game. And we remarked, OJ's the only guy in league history with two 250-yard games, both of which placed those games in the top 12. This Dayton Football History presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Boy, I tell you what, if you've got a snoring problem for you or your loved one, the Custom Fit Somnomed Snore Guard, that's the way to go. Dr. McCall is making people's lives a lot happier with that one. 620-9225, one of the many services you'll find there. In the meantime, check out jamesjmccall.com. Get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That is This State in Football History.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Delisa Lynch, who is Marshawn Lynch's mom, posted on Facebook that she agreed with the Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator Darren Bevell's call to give her son the ball on 4th-and-1 in overtime against St. Louis, which I know It's a real shocker that she would agree with that play call. She did follow that up by saying that he shouldn't even be the one making the play calls and should have been fired after not giving her son the ball from the 1 yard line.
Wait, did she agree or disagree? I thought she disagreed.
She agreed with this week's call.
See, I thought she said, no, you're giving it to him in a situation where, and this is a makeup call.
Yeah, she said she agreed with the call for this week to give her son the ball. She was getting after fans who had said this is why they didn't give him the ball in the Super Bowl.
Right. Well, but she called for Bevel to be fired.
Yeah, after the Super Bowl, she wanted him fired.
I thought she went on to say something to the effect that he just did this to say, see, I can't be blamed now. I'm just going to give it to Marshawn no matter what, no matter what the circumstances
are. There were a bunch of fans that had come out and said, you know, this is why they didn't give him the ball at the 1 yard line in the Super Bowl. And if you look at, actually, Marshawn Lynch's history, he's not been great in that situation. But there were a bunch of fans saying that, and she said they should have given him the ball against St. Louis. They should have given him the ball in the Super Bowl, and the guy who made the play calls in both shouldn't have been allowed to make the second one, essentially, is what she went on there to say.
All right, I guess I read that differently.
But the Baltimore Ravens have signed Jason Babin. The Ravens lost Terrell Suggs for the season to a ruptured Achilles on Sunday, so trying to find some pass rush. The Dallas Cowboys have acquired Bryce Butler, who is a wide receiver from the Oakland Raiders, after working out four veterans yesterday, including Hakeem Nicks. If Butler remains on the Cowboys' 53-man roster for six games, then the Cowboys will send the Raiders their fifth-round pick, receive Oakland's sixth-round pick in return.
What a big swap that is. Got to shake up the foundation.
Yeah, I told you when I got here, I was like, Dallas is a Super Bowl contending team, so they could potentially have, you know, probably among the last, you know, four to six picks in the NFC, potentially.
Oakland could have the first pick.
And you mentioned the compensatory picks, but it could be like a 5-6 place slide.
Right, in the at the end of the fifth round.
Yeah.
So, hey, you know, good luck to Bryce Butler. By the way, when the Dolphins come in this week, they'll bring the reigning AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. That was given to Jarvis Landry as he
had
the 69-yard punt return for a TD that broke the 10-10 tie and set up Miami for the 17-10 victory. By the way, I don't really have time to get into it, nor am I necessarily inclined to go too deeply into it, but did anyone see the debut of the Bastard Executioner last night on FX? Holy smokes, what you're allowed to put on TV after 10 o'clock in terms of the blood, gore, and violence. It doesn't bother me in the least, Tony. I'm just surprised. I mean, I enjoyed the show. I thought it was very well done. It's like Game of Thrones on steroids. If you think no one's safe on Game of Thrones, buddy, let me tell you what. They'll build up a character. They had a two-hour pilot. They'll build a guy up for most of 2 hours just to put a knife through his skull. I mean, it was just absolutely gruesome last night, and I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy that. So let me know what you thought of that on Twitter, at MD_1010XL. All right, let's get to the calls. 641-1010. George is hanging on. Hi, George. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. What I wanted to say is, I watched the game last Sunday. I was really waiting. I've been a fan for almost 10 years. But one thing that I don't mind is losing is something that can happen to a team. But how you lose is what matters. We didn't look good. The team did look good. I mean, like where the Giants lost, you can see that and you're satisfied the game is good. And I think the problem we have is Bortles is throwing the ball so hard. He's throwing the ball at the receivers. It's like he wants to hit them with a ball. He should throw the ball to them.
All right, George. Your first point about the quality of the loss, the way it looks, in the NFL, in the end, you win or you lose. But I will say this. I do think there, you know, for a lot of hardcore fans, and that's their stance, Tony. You either win or you don't, right? But I do think there are a lot of fans, probably like George, would say, look, if we're slugging it out, throwing haymakers back and forth, the lead change, the lead change, the lead change.
Right.
I can live with that. You know,
I'd rather be mad at the
game.
Defense.
Right. I mean, and
that's the truth in football
matter.
Across this country right now. You'd rather be mad at your defense.
The other point of it, no. I'm sorry. Blake Bortles not throwing the ball too hard for his receivers to catch, in my opinion. Brett Favre used to literally break fingers of his receivers in training camp and things like that. You know what you got to do? You got to adjust to how your quarterback throws the ball.
Sure.
Okay? You can't just hand it to them, walk it up there on a pillow. All right? Sometimes you got to put it in there. And I don't think – I look at looking back, I don't see one that, you know, occasionally a guy's going to turn around, the ball's going to be right on him in his face, and it's going to be, you know, too hot to handle. You have all the time. Allen Robinson had all the time in the world to wait for the ball to get to him. I thought Jeff Loggeman made a good point yesterday. You got to attack that ball.
Yeah.
You don't sit back and jump and wait for it to come to you. You got to meet it and attack it.
You know, it's the frustrating part of that, too, is if you watch Monday Night Football, Julio Jones had a play where you couldn't see the route, right? Like in the stadium Sunday, you could see the route by Allen Robinson, but you didn't see the route. I'm watching the game with a couple friends at my place, and Matt Ryan threw the ball over there to the left, and Julio's standing there wide open, snatches the ball 20 yards downfield, and they're like, how'd he get that open? I was like, wait till they re-show the route. Because you knew what it was. You know, if you've watched enough football, you knew it was just one of those where he ran hard,
you stopped,
right,
and you turned
and broke
it
off and came back to the ball. Allen Robinson did all that perfectly. He was the same kind of open that Julio Jones was on that play on Monday Night Football. The route, the throw, the play call, everything about that play was as good as Allen Robinson's drop was bad. That's the problem. He has the ability to do that for you. He has to make that play.
Gotta finish the play. Let's get Maurice in here next on Jaguars Today. Hi, Maurice. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, man?
Good.
My thing is a response basically to your question of the day about the advantages and disadvantages. Listen, man, it's obvious that I think, in my opinion, we beat ourselves more than the Dolphins beat us, like, you know, Bortles was saying and all that. And I think the advantages that we have against this Dolphins team is, I mean, look at what happened last week. I mean, they gave up over 100 yards on the ground to a Redskins team that has a horrible offensive line. I mean, Arthur Morris, too. I mean, it's not to say he's a bad, he's a pretty good back, but they gave up a chunk of yards. I mean, you know, with that Redskins offensive line. So I think Denard last year, if I'm not mistaken, during his hot streak, had a pretty good game against the Dolphins last year. So with the combination of him and I think Gus pretty much hinting that TJ Yeldon will get more carries this week, I think we can pretty much get them there. And I'd say the disadvantages are, you know, basically ourselves, man, the mental errors. Blake, he needs to go back to how he played in the preseason. And then, you know, our receivers getting separation against that. I think the Dolphins have a tough secondary with Brent Grimes. And like you guys were just saying, Allen Robinson with the drops, Allen Hurns with the drops, all mental errors, if anything. So I think those are the advantages and the disadvantages we have. If we can overcome that, I think we can get them, man. Because we should have.
All right, thank you, Maurice. Appreciate it. You know, look, I think running the ball has got to be a big part of it this week, Tony, because, look, it's tough to run up the middle on them, obviously, with Ndamukong Suh in there, but you got to run the ball to slow down that front four, I think. And if Olivier Vernon's in there, Cameron Wake on the other side, and Ndamukong Suh is going to demand double teams in the middle of the line, you're going to create one-on-one pass rush opportunities. Those guys are good enough to take advantage of that in most circumstances, particularly if Luke Jokel's not playing. I mean, you can say what you want about Luke Jokel. He's the best option they have at left tackle, and we'll find out about his status as the week goes on, but I'm not optimistic that he's going to be out there after having a boot on. And
me either.
You got to have some impact running the ball, I think, to slow down the Miami Dolphin pass rush.
It's one of those weeks where you feel like there's a real opportunity for a guy like Brandon Linder, right? Like where he's going to be staring at Ndamukong Suh for most of the day, and there's this opportunity for a guy that I think a lot of people in Jacksonville believe in, could be a potential Pro Bowler. It's time to show up. You know, a test like this, you only get a couple times a season to go up against a guy like Ndamukong Suh. So go out and get it. This was a team in Miami last year that was terrible against the run. That's why they brought in Ndamukong Suh. They want to be better against the run. Week one was not good for them in that department. And I just looked at the stats. Denard Robinson was, let me pull him up again real quick. It was 18 for 108. Against the Miami Dolphins last year. It was part of his back-to-back 100-yard game. So they did run the ball successfully against his team last year. It's a different-looking defensive line. To me, that Linder Suh potential matchup is a big one. You want to be a big boy on this level? Go win that this week.
Well, and I think Linder's probably going to need help on that. As good as we think Linder's going to be, Ndamukong Suh was the highest-paid defensive player prior to the Marcell Dareus contract for a reason. So give me 18 for 108 for TJ, and give me 12 more for 60 for Denard. And
sure,
I think this team can win a football game, and that may be what they need to do to get it done. Johnny O will join us next. John Osier from Jaguars.com. O knows. We'll find out what he does know in terms of advantages and disadvantages for the Jags in their matchup with the Miami Dolphins. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, we're live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for O Knows with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
O Knows.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, final one as we wrap up. Does Jeff Loggeman take offense to the commercial that says no one knows the Jaguars like Johnny O?
No, because, you know, Johnny O knows a lot. John Osher is a very good reporter, and I will tell you this. When John covered this Jaguars football team when I was a player, I had great respect for him because I thought that he did an excellent job. I read everything that John Osher put out there. And even to this day, I still read everything that John Osher puts out there because John has a great feel for a football team and he's an excellent writer.
How about that, Tony, huh? Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya. He's dropping the headset. What can he say after that that could possibly live up to that well-deserved reputation? I'm just trying to bring people together, Johnny O. Welcome to the program.
It's an honor to hear that from somebody who should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Well, clearly. Yeah, by the end of this, Loggeman's going to be like president of the world.
Jeff Loggeman is the greatest defensive end in the history of the NFL.
And we're going to send Johnny O to space to stop a meteor from crashing into Earth. It's going to be fantastic, man. I look forward to the day when Armageddon plays out in real life.
Hey, I assume that's a...
You like that clip.
On a drive somewhere.
Yes, Tyler can email that.
I will email it to you, yeah.
I'm going to put that
nicely played,
on a
Tyler.
Loop in my house and just play it over and over.
Forgot about that until Tyler just played it. He didn't warn us he was going to play it. We got that text yesterday, and we're just bringing people together.
You know how there's that ESPN commercial where you have entrance music now?
Yes.
Everybody's saying it?
That's it.
That's going to be mine.
Why not? Why, has anyone ever said anything as nice about you?
Just put a backbeat over it? Is it backbeat? Is that what the kids say now?
Sure, they do. You're asking me what the kids say right now. John Osher, senior writer from Jaguars.com. Time for O Knows right now. Let me just read this one here on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Guys, says, all this fire everyone talk among the fans is premature if only for one reason. Who are you going to replace Gus, Dave, et cetera, with? Desirable GMs and head coaches don't grow on trees. Who may be available is at least 2 months away. Possible 16 draft picks and undrafted or unrestricted free agents are even further out. Let's just stick to seeing if the Jags can figure out how to get things right with what they have as they get healthy in the next few weeks. That's from Ortapalooza, who follows up with, that being said, the Pagano situation in Indy merits keeping tabs on if you're Shad. So, on the one hand, he's like, hey, who's out there? Hey, maybe can we get the indie guy in here? So,
musical chairs with coaches mid-season. I mean, that's not.
Oh, look, nobody's.
That's not where this.
Nobody rational thinks that there's anything imminent on a coaching move. I understand frustration.
Though. Sure.
I get it. I mean, now, you know, Gus has won 7 games in 2 plus seasons, 7 in 33 attempts. So I get it.
That's going to be out there. I don't think it's on his mind. It can't be on his mind. It's not in his daily walk. I get that it's out there for our purposes. I'm not sure what there is to discuss on that front.
I think it's more venting for fans than anything.
I know it's not what you're getting at. It's just, you know, you're one game in. This is what's going on. And frankly, based on what we saw in the opener, there clearly on the field was enough to go play, to go be competitive in that game, to go win that game. That wasn't always a feeling that you got the last 2 years, that when you walked off the field or when you finished that Jaguars game, there were times where you watched this team the last couple of years where you said, they could play that team 15, 20 times, working win the game.
Granted.
With this one, that doesn't mean Sunday was good. It does give you more of a feeling going forward that there are things they can do to not be what they were in the opener.
You hope, but I think for fans to say, look, to me it's not good enough anymore.
No.
Incremental progress where we measure ourselves against our past selves, which were clearly not good enough selves to measure against.
My point was, the last two seasons, when you had a, there were losses that you had where you said, there's no way they could probably be better than that with this bunch. With that game on Sunday, I don't think there's a feeling that they can't be better than what they were Sunday.
Granted, but I think the frustration is why aren't they?
Right.
Go make the plays and,
sure,
and be better.
Yeah.
You're allowed to be better. So let's put the last Sunday behind us.
Right.
Okay. Dolphins coming up this weekend. We're asking folks today for the Jags, what's the biggest advantage and disadvantage? Whether there's a clear-cut advantage, or what do you think the strength will be that you'd like to see try to be executed against the Dolphins this week?
Well, I know it's been said before, you know, running behind the right side of the offensive line, running period, taking the glimpse and the five or six really good plays from T.J. Yeldon and making those more of your foundation, more of what you are, I think is where you can see a silver lining from the other day of, yeah, that's something they can do. And the Dolphins gave up 160 yards, right? I mean, this is not a team that was a lockdown defense the other day. So you would think that that's the obvious way they go.
Look, they lost their big playmaker early in that game. Washington did, DeSean Jackson, mm-hmm, right, with the pulled hamstring. So now you got your field stretcher out, which changes the way the defenses,
sure,
can play you. Yet they still got solid contributions, if not really good, out of Jordan Reed at tight end and Pierre Garçon without a guy to take attention away. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, for the Jags, Allen Robinson's got to be every bit as good as Pierre Garçon if they're going to go anywhere, right? So they need to go out and find a way to make plays with the guys that they have in this passing game as well. I agree,
yeah,
with you. You got to run the ball. We were just talking about that. Slow down that pass rush. Run right at them. If you're having success, just lean on it all, mm-hmm, day long. They don't need to throw it 40 times, hopefully, this weekend.
And the 40 times, I know Ryan O'Hallion wrote it this morning. I wrote it at some point this week. If you at the end of the first half was a 2-minute drive, and the end of the game was a 7 or 8 pass situation, take those two drives out of it. The split on the pass was about 21-25-ish. I didn't get the idea that it was a dramatically unbalanced game plan the other day.
But in the end, you're at the end of the game where you're in a situation where you have to throw.
Right.
I mean, that plays into it as well. That may not be the game plan.
Right.
But circumstances dictated. You're not scoring. You're not moving,
right,
the ball. And that was part of it in
I'm
the second
I'm talking
half.
About the very last drive when they were down by
you.
11 points.
No, I got it. And then
the two situations where they had 15 passes, had they run the ball 5 times, it would have been, you know, pitchforks to the gate.
Of course. But my point being, you don't want to be in a situation – they're in too many situations at the end of the game where their final drive, that's all they have to do,
sure,
is they're down by a score or two and they have to throw on every down.
Right.
You want to avoid being in that spot.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah,
if you
like,
can do that, then you can be balanced throughout
the game. You're
saying
it's better
game.
To be ahead.
I'm saying, look, I'm
that's
not,
what your 20
look,
years of radio
I'm not trying
right
to
now.
Be go, let's score more points than the other team or
no,
win.
I know.
You know what I mean? I mean, just if you're – part of that reason why they had to do that is because they're still not – doing enough in the other 50 minutes of the game.
Exactly. And, you know, there was no doubt listening to Greg Olsen and Gus Bradley all through the offseason, their bent, their slant is to be a team that can control situations by running the ball. The other day, and that's difficult to do right out of the box with an offensive line that's coming together with a – with a new scheme, I think that's more difficult and should be something that grows in time. The other day, they showed glimpses of being able to do that. And as I said earlier, I think you need to be able to turn those glimpses into more of what the game plan is going to be all about this weekend.
No, I agree with you. I thought that, you know, outside of the – and in the two-minute drill, that's what you're going to do.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter what the score of that game is. That's the kind of thing that you're going to do at the end of the first half. And unfortunately, they just put themselves in a position late. But you go back and look through the play-by-play of that game, it didn't feel out of whack.
Mm-mm.
You know, like the things they were calling didn't feel incongruent with what was going on in the football game. It was just, we talked about it on Monday, John, it's the young guys that need to grow up didn't.
Yeah.
You know, it was opportunities to make plays and guys being put in position to make those plays that just didn't find
right.
a way to do it. And I thought that Yeldon and Denard Robinson excelled.
Mm-hmm.
When they were given opportunities to make plays, they made them. And I actually thought they got plenty of opportunities in the second half when you go back and look at it. It's just when you run the ball three times and Denard's having success on a drive, and then you find Allen Hurns 30 yards downfield and he drops the ball, all that deflation, it comes right back into play.
Yeah, and that's what – it's so tough because the down and distance, if you run a couple of times and you get 5 yards and throw an incomplete pass, then all of a sudden anything you got going in the run early on the drive is gone because you're waiting 3 or 4 minutes to get the ball back. So it's always tough to try to identify a trend off of one game in the NFL because of that reason. But all of that said, I think you will see them, if things are going well for this team, I think you'll see them running and throwing off play action. That's what they want to do. The catch there is once the play action works, you got to catch the ball.
Exactly. The catch is the catch.
Yeah. And that's where it has to happen. They believe it will happen, but until people see it, I get that you're sitting here listening to this voice and saying, just shut up. I want to see it. I don't want to hear
it. Every day.
Yeah.
Every day I see you.
Well, you should talk to my wife for a while. I mean,
man, she must be a
saint.
Try
living with this.
Must be a saint. Jaguars.com Live coming up early today,
yes.
Right? Give us the details. What do you got?
The details are me and J.P. Shadrick will be talking a little ball. And then
at what time?
11:40. And then at that point, we talk to Blake. You know, we carry the Blake Bortles press conference, and then I'll be going to listen to Blake.
There you go.
When the quarterback speaks, I listen.
All right. When Johnny O speaks, Loggeman listens.
Darn fine defensive end who doesn't get the
borderline Hall of Famer.
After that, borderline, I got to start lobbying.
First ballot? Should have been?
Should have been.
Overlooked?
Something's amiss.
Johnny
O. All right, guys.
Thank you, buddy. At John Osier on Twitter. And, of course, you read him on the digital pages of Jaguars.com, .com Live, coming up in less than 10 minutes, along with J.P. Shadrick. John Osier, thanks for popping in. Coming up next, Dr. Stephen Lucy joins us from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. We'll take a look at the weekly injury report. Also, the fan feedback spotlight. Still time to get in on that one today on Twitter at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony, where we ask you today simply, what do you got for the Jags this week in terms of an advantage, biggest advantage versus Miami, and biggest disadvantage with the Dolphins coming in this Sunday? We'll get to some of your responses on that coming up, and as well as on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, your free-flowing diatribes are being received, and we will get some of those out there as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL. Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
All right, on a Metro Rooter Wednesday, let's check the injury report. Dr. Stephen Lucy here with us, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers for your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Dr. Lucy, how are you?
I'm doing well.
We want to know how everyone else is doing right now. How are their psyches, Doc?
Man, these injuries are just adding up.
Oh, my goodness.
There's causing a little stress around JOI, and I'm sure around the Jaguars, too.
No doubt. As far as Luke Jokel, you know, and we understand you're in a position you're not necessarily going to talk specifically about a player's particular injury, but we can talk about the nature of the kinds of injuries these guys are suffering and the typical prognosis. Luke Jokel's ankle sprain is not anything exotic. It's not a high ankle sprain. It's, as you would describe it, a typical lateral ankle sprain, correct?
Right, and most of us have had these. You can do it yourself. You know, you just roll your ankle in. The mild ones, we grade them 1s, 2s, and 3s. The mild ones are 1s. You know, you even come back, maybe play on it. Maybe that's what he had when he went out the first time. The 2s and 3s are actually tears of the ligaments, and you're usually down for the count, like he was on his second injury. And so they're a little more serious. The grade 1s are the ones that, you know, you tape them up. Sometimes they finish the game, you know, the next morning they got a little goose egg, rehab them, and maybe can come back the next week. When you see them on crutches, carted off, that's usually a more serious one. That's going to require a little immobilization. And these guys get well a lot quicker than normal people. And so you don't know how long he was going to be, but I wouldn't look for him back this week. But there's a chance on the following week. It just kind of depends on how fast they recover from these things. And they can, you know, linger.
All right. So I already was not counting Luke Jokel being out there just based on the fact he's in a boot after the game last week. So moving on to Aaron Colvin, sprained shoulder. You know, again, what can you tell us in about that typical kind of injury and what the kind of return would be, return time?
Right. You know, I was watching the game, and my seats are kind of right behind there, and I looked at Aaron, and he had on a little harness sling, which we generally put on people that have not dislocated their shoulder, but the shoulder kind of slips in and slips out. And sometimes those kinds of injuries, we can put a restrictive device that keeps them from going up and out, and it protects them from further injury. So the fact that they had him available for the second half, he was still dressed out. You know, I would suspect it's a matter of his strength, how he feels, and if he feels that he can play DB with a harness on, because they do, you know, you got to get your arm up to bat down, intercept passes. And so I think they're going to be looking to try to get him back in, provided his strength come back, providing that everything does well. But these are injuries that, you know, can become worse, can become painful. You like to wait till the end of the season to tighten up shoulders, but sometimes you got to give up the ghost and do it in the middle. But, you know, usually you give it a go until the end of the season.
All right, we'll find out Aaron Colvin's availability later in the week. Got a couple of guys coming back to practice. The albino tiger, Marquise Lee, is coming back to practice on a limited basis today, as is Cinderic Marks. From your standpoint, if you're a doctor advising, you're watching practice today, you got a guy coming off a hamstring injury, which has prohibited him from being on the practice field for, I don't know, a month or so. What are you looking for that's going to make you feel comfortable that this guy is ready? And then once he is ready, is it critical, in your opinion, to work him in and not overtax him, not go from 0 to 60 right away? In other words, you know, give him a full complement of starter snaps. Is that too much to ask for a guy coming off of a hamstring injury?
No, I think you're right about that. You don't want to go from 0 to full time. But what you want to see is you want his position coach to say, yes, he's got the explosion. And more importantly, you want to hear from the player. How does it feel? Can I go full speed? And they'll tell you with these hamstrings and groins, they'll say, you know, doc, I could play, but it's going to be 80%. And so that's where it becomes a coaching decision, and you don't want to obviously re-hurt him. But if he's exploding and he thinks and you're hearing good things from the player, we might see him play.
And final thought on Cinderic Marks here. I think a lot of what you've told us and what we've heard anecdotally about ACL injuries is just for the player, even when it's healed, it's believing in that knee, right? That you the feeling that, okay, I don't have to hold back. I don't have to be hesitant. There is somewhat of a mental hurdle in coming back, isn't there, typically?
There is, and there's also a difference in finishing the medical rehab to the football rehab, and he's on the football rehab side now. And, you know, they want to see him be able to explode, and the coaches and the strength and conditioning people want to be confident that he is football ready. You saw with Chris Clemens, they held him out, and he seemed to be – that was the right move. He did well. He played himself back in good shape. And I think when they feel that Cinderic is ready to go from a football standpoint, they'll let him get back in there.
All right, hopefully nothing new to talk about next week when you pop in with us here, huh?
We don't need any more.
We don't need any more. Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Dr. Stephen Lucy, thank you, buddy. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Your weekly injury report from JOI here in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios.
Hopefully next week we can start talking about when is Julius Thomas going to be able to get
And how can we get to 2-1 against the New England Patriots, for goodness sakes, Tony? Fan Feedback Spotlight is brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Asking Jaguar fans, what drives you today? We ask you, give us your biggest perceived advantage and disadvantage in this matchup with the Dolphins.
From Demetrius, number one disadvantage would be Miami and their front four on defense. Their secondary is a liability, so Blake Bortles has to be on his game. From Eric, based off last week, Yeldon is an advantage in the run. The big disadvantage is the Dolphins' defensive backs. It's the exact opposite. From Jason, he said advantage. Wish I could say home field. Disadvantage, already having nightmares about Sue and Wake. from Dylan. Advantages, they are playing Dolphins. Disadvantage, they are the Jaguars. Hashtag we suck again. From Cristiano.
Oh, no.
Advantage, fans can hold up 62-7 signs. Disadvantage, fans may want to wear paper bags while holding those signs.
From
Joey. Advantage, mascot. Disadvantage, everything else, but I don't care. Find a way, get lucky. Hashtag just win, baby.
Just win.
From David, advantage, running game. Disadvantage, pass coverage. From Duval Doom, Dolphins already think the Jaguars suck, so the advantage would be if we can just not suck. Hashtag trap game. From Jason, disadvantage, their rush against our O-line. Advantage, is their over-aggressive rush against our right tackle, right guard. Hashtag run right. From Daniel, advantage is the running game. Disadvantage is having to double-team Sue. From Brian, advantage, we're not coached by Joe Philbin. Disadvantage, our offense, if it's like last week. From Irish Jaguar, if you're going to make me look at this with logic, I can't help you. Stop dampening my mood. From Colby, advantage, element of surprise, looking past Jags. Disadvantage, pressure on Tannehill. From Ocho Ficho, top advantage, trustworthy head coach. Top disadvantage, talent. And from Blake Bortles, fact, advantage, Blake Bortles. There's a shock. Disadvantage, there are none, because Blake Bortles. And that's what we got today.
This one from Chad Cox, quickly on Facebook. Biggest advantage is hopefully Bortles coming out with a chip on his shoulder and make some damn plays. Biggest disadvantage is Bortles if he comes out flat and dwells on last week's mistakes. The Jags live and die with Bortles. We're not good enough to win without him right now. Hashtag be a man, Bortles. Hashtag Jags are babies. Ouch. Oof. I think what he said, you're not good enough to win without Blake Bortles being good, right? I don't think the team's good enough to overcome Blake Bortles playing poorly or anything on that scale to less than average, right? And I think that's what he was. I think he was okay in the first half, and then the pick six was start of the half that was just not very good.
Yeah, he was okay in the first half. Again, that's a team that could have easily scored 13 points in that half. Probably should have scored more than that if you don't have the fumble down inside the 10-yard line. I mean, it could have been a pretty good half of offensive football when everything was said and done for the Jags, and you expect them come out and build off of that, right? And instead, you got what you got, and it was just bad, all around bad.
Victory Monday, Tony. You smell it coming? It's too far away for me to smell yet.
But I don't know that I expect a Victory Monday. I'm hopeful.
Hopeful. Let's be hopeful for it. All right. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. For any size plumbing job, you can trust these people in your home. They're going to get it done right the first time. I've had them in my house, and I've always been pleased with the results. Metro Rooter, same-day service, weekends included. The right people with the right equipment. Visit MetroRooter.com or call them at 695-1911. 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor. Thanks to Dr. Stephen Lucy. Thanks to John Osher of Jaguars.com. And thanks to all of you out there who chimed in on the Boston's Restaurant Sports Bar text line and the phones, the Twitter, and the Facebook. We love the feedback. Keep it coming. Hopefully the Jags will keep you interested enough to continue to do that this weekend. Coming up. Thanks to Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato. For Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime coming up next right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. You know what else is coming up next? Week 2 of the National Football League season kicks off tomorrow night. Week 2 of our FanDuel League kicks off Sunday at 1 o'clock. We don't use the Thursday game, so if Thursday night football goes by and you're thinking, oh man, I forgot to get in the FanDuel League with Mike and Tony, it's okay. There'll still be time, but it is going to fill up quickly. We're capped at 200 owners this week, 200 teams allowed, and we're already at 74 entries. So this thing is going to fill up. We haven't really even started pushing it yet. Go to FanDuel.com, and if you're signing up for the first time, use promo code Mike when you click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and FanDuel will match your first deposit all the way up to $200. You put in 200 over time, you'll get another 200 released into your account from FanDuel as you play. And here's where you go directly to play against us, FanDuel.com/Mike. It's that easy. Go to that address, sign up. $5 gives you a shot at some nice prizes. Top prize well over $100 this week. So come dip into our pockets, use our advice against us, and win some of our money. FanDuel.com. Everybody's playing. Over $75 million paid out this week at FanDuel.com.
Now Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job.